The Rudy Valley Hour with Franklin P. Adams, Donald Budge, Ezra Stone, Joe E. Lewis, Tito and his accordion swing tet, and Misha Levitsky.
Everybody, this is Rudy Valley and company. We, the Connecticut Yankees, and yours truly, return to our Thursday evening home grounds in New York after a week in Chicago and 5 days in Minneapolis to join up with
FPA and Donald Budge.
Franklin P. Adams, the New York Post's brilliant column conductor, also is tennis editor of the New Yorker magazine. He teams up on this occasion with Donald Budge, the world's top-ranking amateur tennis player.
Ezra Stone,
star of the Broadway hit What a Life, returning to us in the character of an entertainingly adolescent Henry Aldrich with a brand new sketch.
Joe E. Lewis,
one of the most renowned of nightclub jesters.
Tito and his accordion swing tet,
who demonstrate the latest revelation in music that's hot.
Misha Levitsky,
one of the finest of concert pianists, combining these distinguished representatives of journalism, athletics, the theater and the nightclub, the swing session, the concert platform, and the Connecticut Yankees, we have
the Rudy Valley Hour, Act One, presented by the makers of Royal Desserts, Royal Gelatin, and Royal Puddings.
Must you dance every dance with the same fortunate man? You have danced with him since the music began. Won't you change partners and dance with me? Must you dance quite so close, with your lips touching his face? Can't you see I'm longing to be in his place? Won't you change partners and dance with me? Ask him to sit this one out, and while you're alone, I'll tell the waiter to tell him he's wanted on the telephone. You've been locked in his arms ever since heaven knows when. Won't you change partners and then? You may never want to change partners again.
Full of Irving Berlin these days. This time it's a lovely new song from the new RKO picture Carefree with Miss Rogers and Mr. Astaire. And it's called Changed Partners.
Thank you.
around the nightclubs, a droll individual comedian. My good friend, Joe E. Lewis, king of the nightclubs. King Joe has reigned merrily at many famous nocturnal institutions. At present, he has starred at Ben Martin's Riviera, just across the Hudson. He has delighted fun-loving customers at the Trocadero in Los Angeles, the Royal Frolics in Chicago, the Royal Palms in Miami, and all points between. Make way for the king of nightclubs, Joe E. Lewis.
I like that mountain music, Rudy.
That mountain music?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm glad you like it, Joe. You know, I haven't seen you since California. Where have you been?
Well, I've been down to Florida last winter. I like Florida in the winter season. The climate is wonderful there, and you live nice. You know, you get up in the morning, you go to your backyard, you pick oranges, you pick grapefruits, and in the afternoon you go to the Tropical Park racetrack and you pick lemons.
I saw you at the Trocadero in California. How'd you like the truck?
Oh, the dear old Trocadero is a nice place to work because all the movie stars are there. They're very appreciative. The bigger they are, the nicer they are. And the food of the Trocadero is marvelous. You know, you can get a fine steak there for $12.50 with meat all around it. Yes, and those hors d'oeuvres, the minute you walk in, that maitre d' gives you those hors d'oeuvres. That's a big fake, too. They charge a lot of money for hors d'oeuvres. I found out what that was. Hors d'oeuvres is just a hunk of herring with a press agent. That's all it is. But, I started in showbiz in Chicago. And when I'm through with that Riviera, Ben Martin's place, or when they're through with me, I go to Chicago at the High Hat Club. Very smart place. And I like to be in Chicago because I started there in this racket. And I like Chicago. I can safely say I started in Chicago many years ago. I didn't have what to eat. And I can safely say I worked myself up from nowhere to an extreme case of poverty right now. Yes, sir. I worked in one of those intimate rooms many years ago, seating about 3,000 people, including the partners. And, of course, we never proved it, so we had to close up. It was one of those places, you know, no minimum, no cover charge, no customers, no food, no dancing, just a check, that's all. And we had a three-piece band in that place, a piano, a guy, and a stool. And the leader was a nice fellow. He was sort of a poor man's Toscanini, with a personality like a temporary filling. He kind of looked like a bed that hadn't been made up for 8 weeks. But he was a nice fellow, and that's why I like it. And, Rudy, I'm very happy to be here with you, Mr. V.
Thank you, Mr. L.
Oh, come. Don't be so formal. Call me Mr. J.
Okay, Joe.
Okay, Rude.
It's not Rude, it's Rudy.
Now, wait a minute. When I use Rude, that's the present tense, see? Rudy is a past tense. When you have a noun that mixed up with a gender, that comes consecutive adjective, you mean, see? I'll learn you, don't worry. I always use the infinite split of a verb anytime I feel, or I'd rather be in a subjunctive mood right now. And that is only possible in a year with an R in it, like May or July, or 30 days as September. April, June, excepting my brother, he got 60 days for shoplifting. As the crow flies. And it's taken from the picture of the same name. But then again, you must realize that all the characters, either living or dead, are strictly from hunger, Tifatu, and L'amour toujours l'amour. Thank you. I started out to say, Rudy, I'm very happy to be here, even though you have convinced me that money isn't everything. Of course, Rudy, I'm never going to worry about money because all my life I have been a very careful student of a dollar. Using the language of my piano player, Mr. Morowitz, I have the first buck I ever made. And if I want to step out of the show business tonight, I can live like a king for about 3 hours. As the crow flies, only. But this business, this show business, is merely a hobby for me, that's all. Because I have protected myself as a youth. I have insurance, I have annuities, I have real estate. Why, I owe a lovely hotel in Cleveland. I owe a hotel in Buffalo. different real estate like that I have. I owe everybody. I'm a bum. There I owe. And then again, I have different things going for me under assumed names. Rudy, you won't believe this. Right now, I have a little restaurant on 8th Avenue. That takes care of me all the time. 8th Avenue and 50th Street. Sometimes I go under the name of Dempsey, Jack Dempsey. Different things like that I have. And then again, if things ever get too rough, I have my brother Al. I can fall back on him any time at all. Of course, Brother Al is peculiar. He likes to take little things that don't belong to him. For instance, a few months ago, he stole a ferry boat. Little knickknacks he likes. Right now, he has what we call a hot ferry boat on his hands. But he's very smart. He's done it before. They'll never catch him. All he does, he changes the whistle. Nobody knows. Yes, Brother Al is very allergic to Tom Dewey and his entire staff, as the crow flies. One time, he gave a friend of mine a check on a Boston bank. The next week, it came back marked No Boston. Genius, genius, genius. Of course, Brother Al is not a thief. Don't get him wrong. Brother Al just finds things before people lose them. That's all. Recently, my brother worked in a parachute factory, and he wrote a theme song for those people. It's called It Don't Mean a Thing If You Can't Pull That String. And I have a little airplane song that I've dedicated to that brave little Irish kid, Douglas Corrigan. I'm going to sing it tonight the hard way, frontwards. As the crow flies, l'amour toujours, and toujours chercher la femme, excepting February, which has only 28. Union. Everybody's writing songs about Corrigan, so that his renown we cannot forget. But of all the songs that I heard about Corrigan, I don't think the right one has been written yet. But who am I to try to write a Corrigan song? I know if I wrote it, I'd only wrote it wrong. So this song is not about Corrigan, who sailed this plane across the sea. This song has nothing got to do with Corrigan, but his name will go down in history. And he made the flight in the middle of the night. The credit and the glory shall be his. But this song has nothing got to do with Corrigan. All right, so what? So it is. Corrigan, C-O-R-R-I-G-A-N. C stands for the waves across the ocean. O means lover, come back to me. Double R means the latitude and the longitude. I is for my old Kentucky house. G stands for Itisket, Itasket. A and N means chocolate little bars without nuts. Smash it all together, spells Corrigan. A word that means a world to me.
Weeks ago, our listeners learned something of the early life of Henry Aldrich, that astonishing young man created by Ezra Stone in the George Abbott comedy success, What a Life. Clifford Goldsmith, author of What a Life, obliged and delighted us on that occasion by writing a new sketch based on the characters of his play. It was, in three little words, a quick click. So we invited Mr. Goldsmith to tell us more of the life of Henry Aldrich, and his answer was another sketch called More of the Life of Henry Aldrich. Assisting Mr. Stone are Leah Penman, Betty Field, Clyde Fillmore, and Blaine Fillmore. Ezra Stone in More of the Life of Henry Aldrich. The time, around 6:30 on any evening you might choose. The place, the Aldrich home, anywhere in America. As our curtain rises, Henry Aldrich's father wraps a silver knife very firmly against a china plate.
Henry Aldrich.
Yes, Father?
Will you come here to this dinner table at once? Is dinner ready, Father?
What do you think your mother called you three times for?
Did she call me? I didn't hear her even call once.
What you ought to do is make Henry go without his dinner.
Supposing you stay out of this and just pass me the pepper.
Yes, Father.
My little song, you were in my heart.
Henry Aldrich.
Yes, Father.
Did you hear what I said?
What, Father?
I don't think Henry hears very well.
You don't think he does? Come down here at once.
I'm watching. You don't want me to come on watch, do you?
I don't know what difference it would make.
What?
Hurry up, Henry!
Okay, only don't wait for me, anybody.
Sometime I should like to come home from a difficult day at the office and find a little peace at this table.
Did something go wrong today, dear?
No, just a letter from Mr. What was that?
Henry, what are you doing?
Nothing. I thought Father told me to hurry downstairs.
Perhaps I did, but I certainly didn't tell you to fall downstairs.
My goodness, I go to the trouble of making hot muffins for the family, and now look at them.
I'm sorry, Mother.
Wasn't there any towel up there in the bathroom, Henry?
Any towel? Oh, I have to dampen my hair a little, or it won't stay in place. Father, if I should start to walk from New York to San Francisco, how long do you think it would take me?
I haven't the slightest idea.
Well, about how long?
It would depend on a great many things.
Sure, I know that, but taking all those things into consideration, how long do you think it would take?
When do you leave?
Did I ask you? Father, take a stab.
Henry Aldrich, will you stop talking and begin to eat your dinner?
I'm sorry. How long, Father?
Henry, where are your elbows?
But I'm tired.
If you're planning to walk from New York to San Francisco, you certainly ought to have strength enough to hold yourself up while you're at the table.
What were you doing, Henry, that you couldn't hear your mother the first time she called you?
I wasn't doing anything.
You weren't doing anything?
No, sir. I was just listening to the radio. There was a guy telling about how important the skunk is to our lives.
Yes, well, let's not go into that subject while we are here at the table.
Only you'd be surprised. Skunks aren't half as bad as people think they are.
Henry, haven't you any sense of decency?
What have I said? I just said skunks were better than most...
Henry, that'll be enough.
Yes, Father. Only it certainly isn't my fault if she thinks skunks aren't clean.
Henry!
Oh, there was also a bird whistler on the program. Was he good? Did you ever hear a quail?
Henry!
It seems to me that a boy of your age should have some other interest in life than just sitting and listening to a radio. The radio is a wonderful thing, but...
Oh, I have other interests.
Name one. I mean, besides how wonderful a skunk is.
I'll tell you what I'd do in a minute if I didn't have a family.
Henry, don't you realize the rest of us are almost two courses ahead of you? Finish your soup.
When I was your age, we didn't even have radios. If we wanted any entertainment, we... Henry!
Just a bird whistler. Mother, do you mind if I leave the room till Henry's through?
All I was doing was trying to catch up with you.
During the rest of the evening, young man, you're not to waste any more time around that radio.
You mean I can't even tune in on it?
You're not to go near it. Is that clear?
Yes, Father. Could I have a muffin, please? Could I have a muffin, please?
Mary?
Well, Mother, they're just as close to him as they are to me.
Do you want to measure it?
Here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Look, Mother, look at all he's taken.
You don't think I'm going to go through all this formality for every muffin on that plate, do you?
Put at least two of those back.
Is this the first time you've eaten today?
It's the first time since 3 o'clock.
Now then, I don't want to hear another word from either of you children until you've finished your dinner and your dessert. Is that clear, Mary?
Yes, Mother.
Is that clear, Henry?
Yes, Mother. What are we having for dessert?
Oh, for heaven's sake.
Henry, your father's had an extremely difficult day, and there are one or two matters that we would like to discuss. Now then, dear, you started to say something about a letter.
It was from our landlord, Mr. Johnson. That makes the third consecutive year he's raised our rent.
Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Johnson.
I know Mr. Johnson.
I imagine we could move to some place where it would be cheaper, but I suppose the wisest thing is to tell him we'd stay and pay through the nose.
Could I have another muffin, please?
Henry, do you realize your father is speaking?
To me?
That makes at least 7 he's had.
My gosh, I've only had 6. And I can't even feel them.
Is the number of muffins you've eaten the only matter of importance that can be discussed in this household?
No, but there's a whole lot of difference between 6 and 7.
And that reminds me, Henry Aldrich, when are you going to pay me that $7 you owe me?
Do we have to go into that at this time?
That's what I say. What do you want to do, spoil my appetite right here at the table?
I'd certainly like to see something spoil it.
Sure. I'm not allowed to talk about anything at all while we're eating. But she can bring up any subject she wants to, no matter how unpleasant it may be. What's the matter, Father?
Not a thing. Not a thing.
What are we going to do about that letter?
What I'd like to do is to write and tell him what a dog I think he is.
Did any of you know that lots of people, instead of having dogs, have skunks for pets?
Were there any phone calls for me today?
Do you realize that you're interrupting me?
Were there any, Mother?
There were no phone calls.
There will be. Does that guy's father work for the telephone company?
Hey, Henry!
Hi, Bill!
That's Bill.
What's the matter? Doesn't that boy have any home?
Why?
Mary, go to the window and tell that young man that Henry can't come out until he's finished his dinner.
Mother says Henry can't come out until he's through.
What's he doing?
He's eating muffins.
Tell him to come on in.
You tell that boy to stay out there where he belongs.
We've got something important to discuss about our trip.
Your trip where?
From New York to San Francisco.
How much longer will Henry be?
We don't know. This is the first food he's had since 3 o'clock this afternoon.
I'll answer it.
Henry Aldrich! You let me answer that phone.
How do you know it's going to be for you?
Henry Aldrich!
Hello? Well, who is this?
I think he's Horrid.
How do you spell it? I never even heard of the party.
What was it?
The wrong number. He wanted to talk to somebody by the name of Toots.
Henry, sit down here and eat your pie. Your father was trying to tell me about that letter from Mr. Johnson. Can we or can't we afford to pay more rent?
Of course we can't afford to pay more. But what else can we do?
Father, could I say something?
You certainly may not.
I just wanted...
Henry!
I just wanted to say I was down at Mr. Johnson's house last Friday.
What were you doing down there?
His police dogs had pups. While I was there, I overheard Mr. Johnson talking to his wife. He was telling her he was going to write you that letter just to see whether he could get more rent or not. And if you refused, he'd let you have it for what you're paying now.
Well, why didn't you tell me that before?
You wouldn't let me tell you before!
Well, I think I'll have a cigar.
Could I listen to the radio tonight, Father?
What did I just tell you about wasting your time with that thing? Besides, there's a program I want to hear.
Could I have a muffin, please?
There aren't any more.
You mean there aren't any more? Oh, well, I'll take another piece of pie, then.
One of the ablest and most popular concert pianists. Misha is not only a fine musician, but also one of the most genial. After a long international concert tour, Mr. Levitsky betook himself to his home in Avon, New Jersey, for a summer of uninterrupted swimming. However, Mr. Levitsky has interrupted his swimming and his tennis long enough to provide us with the best of concert music, which takes the form of Misha Levitsky playing Chopin's Fantasy Impromptu.
Thank you.
An encore by Misha Levitsky, another Chopin favorite, The Butterfly Etude. Coming week, treat your family to homemade ice cream. Just a moment, having duly elapsed, we go into action again with such eminent visitors as Franklin P. Adams, Donald Budge, and Tito and his accordion swingtet, all of whom make their entrances in the Rudy Valley Hour, Act Two, brought you by Fleischmann's Yeast, the tonic food that's helping so many people over 40. That helps them feel young for their age, more vigorous and energetic. Many of the songs of yesterday are coming back, although they have never really gone away. Assisted by our choristers, we present a medley of melodies from approximately the turn of the century, arranged by Elliot Jacoby. They range from Taraboom Die to the Floradora Sextet, with solo contributions by Marion Clark, Crane Calder, and yours truly.
Taraboom Die, Taraboom Die, Taraboom Die.
Oh, sweet tuxedo girl I see, queen of swell society, fond of fun as fun can be, when it's on the strict QT.
I'm not too young, I'm not too old, not too timid, not too bold, just the kind you'd like to hold. Just the kind for sport, I'm told.
Put your arms around me, honey, hold me tight, huddle up and cuddle up with all your might. Oh, babe, won't you roll them eyes, eyes that I just idolize. When they look at me, my heart begins to float, then it starts a-rocking like a motorboat. Oh, babe, I never knew another girl like you.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my honey. Hello, my ragtime gal. Send me a kiss, boy, boy. Maybe my heart. Oh, if you refuse me, honey, you lose me. Then you'll be left alone. Oh, baby, telephone and tell me I do.
Hello, 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 hello.
Like I say, this very day, I like to change your name. Cause I love you and love you too. And if you love me, one leave is two, two leave is one, under the bamboo tree.
Like you.
There are a few kind girls, but simple girls and proper too.
Then tell me, pretty maiden, what these very simple girlies do.
Kind sir, their manners are perfection and the opposite of life.
If I love you, would you tell me what I ought to do to keep you all mine alone, to always be true to me?
If I love you, would it be a silly thing to do?
For I must love someone.
Then why love me?
For I must love someone really.
Certainly notice how people begin dropping out.
We've had many champions in sport with us of Thursday evenings, practically all of the great names in the athletic world. But as one who plays a bit of tennis himself now and then, I doubt whether we have ever presented a greater champion than Donald Budge, ranked number one in the national tennis ratings and easily the most famous amateur tennis player in the world today. In this court, if we had a tennis court, ladies and gentlemen, Donald Budge of California. And opposing Donald Budge on this theoretical tennis court of ours is the tennis critic of the New Yorker magazine, the columnist of the New York Post, a gentleman whom we have met here before with the greatest of pleasure, FPA, Franklin P. Adams. Ready, Mr. Budge?
Ready, Rudy.
Ready, Mr. Adams?
I'm Rudy. Ready, Mr. Valley.
Make up your mind. Franklin P. Adams serving to Donald Budge. Play.
Mr. Budge, I would rather face you across the microphone than across the net.
Well, I didn't know that you were a tennis player, Mr. Adams.
Well, I am, if I say so myself.
I thought that you were a writer.
Huh. All the tennis players that have seen me play think that I must be a writer, or something.
Maybe the people who read your writings think that you must be a tennis player, or something.
Mr. Budge, you cross-courted me mighty pretty that time.
Tell me, in all your tennis playings, Mr. Adams, did you ever beat anybody?
Not exactly. I once got into the second round of a tournament, though.
How did you do that?
I got a default in the first round. But I won a set of doubles once. Would you like to hear about it?
Frankly...
I say, would you like to hear about it?
Frankly, no.
Well, I want to tell about my triumph. It's kind of long, however.
Well, all right. I don't have to play again until tomorrow, anyway.
Whom do you play at the Westchester Country Club, Rye, New York, tomorrow afternoon?
Well, we're playing in the doubles. My partner Gene Mako and I are going to play Hughes and Bala, two California boys.
You going to win?
Well, we never know in advance. We thought we had a pretty good chance in the national doubles last year at Longwood, but the team of Von Kramm and Henkel beat us badly.
Yes, I saw that match. But look here, Mr. Budge, are you trying to get out of my telling you about the match I won?
Well, yes, that was my idea, but I guess I'm beaten again. Go ahead.
Well, you were not my first hero. My first hero was Maurice E. McLaughlin, who was national champion in 1912 or 1913, or as my certified public accountants figure it, 2 years before you were born in Oakland, California. Well, I was visiting San Francisco, and McLaughlin invited me to play some doubles at the California Tennis Club, Black Asphalt Courts. Know where I mean?
I should say so. I've played on them lots of times.
Well, McLaughlin was my partner. We were playing Carlton Gardner, a first 10 player, and another good player. We won 6-2, 6-3.
Fine thing. You must have been pretty good.
It was my strategy that won. Except for the games I served, I just ran off the court and got out of McLaughlin's way. But I won all my service games.
That sounds something like me. But did you have a fast service?
No. But the dubs I played with around New York thought I had a cannonball serve. So after this match in San Francisco, and I served faster than I ever have before or since, Gardner said to me, that slow service of yours had us fooled. Now, I've been fair with you and told you all about my career. How did you happen to become a tennis player? I wouldn't be overstating it if I said the tennis player.
Why, everybody in California, Mr. Adams, plays tennis. My brother was quite good, and through him, I learned to enjoy it.
I've noticed you still seem to enjoy it.
That's true. I love to play. I remember a poem I read once. How do you like to get out on a court, out in the August sun? Oh, I think that is the pleasantest sport ever a boy has done.
That's pretty good.
Thank you very much.
I wrote it.
I thought so. That's why I said that.
I remember one, too. The child who has a little nerve will have a pretty decent serve. He'll win a match, I'm pretty sure, unless his forehand drive is poor.
Well, that rhymes all right, but it isn't true. More poetry than truth. That reminds me of the old saying, I'm a poet and don't know it, but my feet show it. They're Longfellow's.
I think you stumbled on something pretty big there, my fine fellow. What's wrong with a poem?
Well, a service and a forehand drive aren't enough, though you have to have both of those weapons.
What else do you have to have?
Well, you need a strong backhand, a smash from anywhere in the court, a stop volley, a drop shot, and a lob. That is, a defensive and an offensive lob. And anticipation, so that you know where the ball is coming.
Well, that just about describes your game, Mr. Budge. It seems to me, if you don't mind my saying so to your face, that your game has no weaknesses. Only one other player in my time also had no weaknesses, William T. Tilden.
Well, that's pretty hard to live up to, but I think Tilden was the greatest player of all time.
Well, I've seen you play ever since you came east 4 years ago, and I think your game is at least as good as Tilden's. And I've also noted that you haven't lost a match for some time.
Well, did you ever think that that might be because I haven't played you?
No, I hadn't. That hadn't occurred to me. I don't know about that. But there's another asset that a fine tennis player must have that you don't mention.
Well, maybe that's one of my weaknesses.
No, it certainly is not. It is stamina, a lion heart. In fact, I've got a nickname for you. I stole it from a book written by Stephen Crane.
What is that?
The Red Budge of Courage. And Mr. Budge.
Say, that's strictly Station House.
Mr. Budge, you think that I'm a great writer, just as I know that you're a great tennis player, and I'll make a trade with you.
All right, sounds interesting. Let's have it.
I'll give you one of my pencils if you'll give me one of your tennis rackets.
While I was making the picture Sweet Music, one of my most diverting assignments was to smash violins, real violins, over the head of an accordion player in Frank and Milt Britton's band. Evidently, there was no damage, except to the violins. For the accordion player survived to become a band leader himself. Perhaps the experience was educational. The young gentleman over whose accommodating head I broke the fiddles was Tito Guidotti. His band is called Tito and His Accordion Swingtet, an unusual group consisting of three hot accordions, a guitar, and a bass, and no violins. Swing Music. Lend an ear to Tito and His Accordion Swingtet playing one of Tito's own compositions entitled with simple austerity, Stuff and Things. Now for a demonstration of the last word to date in modern swing music. Tito and His Accordion Swingtet play The Coronation of King Neptune by Joseph Miro. This, Tito assures me, is no jam session, not even a clambake. It is a composition developed along almost symphonic lines, and there is a scenario. First, the music describes the waves of the sea, then the revelry of nymphs, mermaids, and other sub-oceanic celebrities. A majestic coronation takes place. The revelry resumes, dying away, and once more we hear only the sound of the waves. All in good, hot swing, of course.
Thank you.
Now especially to people over 40.
People over 40 should make sure they're getting plenty of vitamins. We now realize they need vitamins.
You find it no matter where you go. You may be in Kahlua or Kokomo, or you may be on the ocean or by a wishing well. The street lights may be blinking when you get that sinking spell. Cupid gets around back and forth. Now it's North Carolina, then it's China. Doesn't seem to matter. You can fall on a hayride or a sleigh ride. So wear a suit of armor when you go out to play. 'Cause love, love, love is where you find it, and you'll find it out someday.
Tunes from the Warner Brothers picture, Garden of the Moon. The story is written by John Brown, guiding genius of Hollywood's glamorous Coconut Grove, and you had three guesses as to what nightclub is meant by Garden of the Moon. I persuaded the Warner Brothers to film the story, thinking that I might play the part myself. Unfortunately, Warner Brothers and I were too far apart, geographically speaking only. But I'm still happy that the story itself lived up to my expectations. The tunes are Love Is Where You Find It, Confidentially, which Carol Gould will presently carol, and Garden of the Moon.
Confidentially, I'm so in love, I go floating through the air. Confidentially, the stars above have seen the secret in my eyes. Oh, I know that everybody's guessing, I'm not confessing fool. But darling, you are bound to know eventually, so confidentially, it's you.
And you'll find it out someday.
another show with many entertainers, including Walter Hamden, who plays Svengali, and Zazu Pitts, who is in a new and surprising sketch about a lady who got her ticket. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night. And may I thank those people in Chicago and Minneapolis for your delightful reception.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.